enforcement and the judiciary that this was an important thing. It takes a while to make that case to some folks, but sometimes things happen that help make that case. National video, national cases helped that. The clear knowledge that we were dealing with a much larger Latino population than folks wanted to admit. The governor signed the Latino Hispanic Heritage Month bill yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, and they talking about the same kind of thing, because we started to see, people started to recognize that we're talking, I think it's at least one in five kids in school in Oregon are Latino. When you start to see that kind of a change, you can't ignore certain things. And so we started to see other groups come together to work on this. Casey Jama and his team of folks from Unite Oregon.
Unite Oregon, yeah.
But he was his group before that. He had a group of young people who went out around the state and talked with other folks and said, "Are you seeing this as a problem? And would you mind writing down your story or coming in to talk with folks about it?" They did that. That's why we were able to pass the bill in 2015 that said, let's do a study on this. Let's do at least a couple of some research on it. The Attorney General and her team went out. Urias Johnson and groups went to different places, held hearings that were extraordinary. And they talked about the ethnicity issues. They talked about a number of other issues, poverty, LGBT, youth issues, how they were addressed on the MAX and how they were addressed in Medford and in Coos Bay. All of these things came to bear, and it made a difference. And so that's why the Attorney General, if you notice that the bill was sponsored by the Attorney General, when she came in, she said, "We need to do this in a different way." I said, you know, "I'll support it." I couldn't co-sponsor it because it was by the Attorney General, but I basically tried to do just that. So did a number of other folks. And we were able to get that point across. But we also got across, I mean, one of the reasons that I think the defelonization passed was because the Oregon Chiefs of Police and the Oregon Sheriff's Association came forward and said, we agree with this. We need to, and one of the reasons that they agreed with us, they said, it's very clear to us that we have a disparate enforcement, a disparate situation where people are being pulled over, and the judiciary has been clearly including, clearly a problem for ethnicity, African American, Latino, others, Native American, and Asian, saying they are getting addressed differently than others. We need to change that. And it's not effective. It's not working for us. It doesn't do what we think it should be doing. So let's rethink this.
So now, if I understand, it's going to be the data collection and the training will be concurrent, or how?
They're going to continue to look at how they can best do this. We already have some of the training down. It's just a matter of expanding it to folks who are already on the force.
Okay. This is a criminal justice research conference in, 2002?
Mm.
Yeah, 2002, maybe 2003, Boston. It's Justice Research Statistics Association used to have these brilliant conferences. They were doing a look at NIBRS, the National Incident-Based Reporting System, which is supposed to replace the Uniform Crime Reports. One of the, there's a criminologist in the room, they were doing a demonstration of the data and looking at all the things that they can see. And one of the professors pointed out, okay, the neighborhood that you've got there, I know that neighborhood, that's a largely Latino neighborhood, and yet all of these incidents that you've got there, all the indicators you're showing that all these people who are being stopped and arrested, all these are white people in this predominantly Latino neighborhood. So there's something wrong with this. Like, oh yeah, well, that's because the Latino ethnicity is still an optional report. And they've been working on this was in the early 2000s, working on it for so long. I mean, that ultimately is one of the reasons why the criminal justice, that's one of the reasons why the UCR here hasn't been collecting that. It wasn't required by the feds, still
right.
isn't.
Right.
So it's...
Well, you know, what you're identifying is sort of holes in the system that folks don't really want to acknowledge. Because if they do, then they're going to have to do something about it.
And that's the tricky part. Like, oh, I guess we got to fix it.
We've got to fix it. And who's going to be responsible for fixing it? And who's going to be responsible if it's not fixed? So that you have those two things that come into bear there.
All right, let's talk for a moment. Jump over to defeminization. This is a major thing, and that too. It's the police, the chiefs of police, and the sheriffs supported.
Absolutely, they were the primary one of the primary groups supporting it.
You've got a few people
very visibly too. Not yeah, that's a good idea. They came and they spoke at news conferences. They came and they spoke in the committee hearings on this.
I've got. I do a few different shows, and I was looking at the testimony in that final. The joint is it the Joint Ways and Means?
Yeah, Joint Ways and Means Committee. Oh yeah, that was an interesting. That was interesting testimony. Yeah.
But you had the Kimberly McCullough from ACLU. Right. You had Casey Jama from Unite Oregon there, and you also had Josh Marquis mm-hmm. show up on his own. Mm-hmm. I mentioned he took exception to something I said about him. I said that, or at least I characterized part of what he said as, well, we don't really put people in jail for petty possession anyway. I mean, specifically, what he said was, we are very concerned. It's really not a war on drugs in Oregon. Let's be honest. As someone who's in court every day, the idea that we, as the ACLU says, have harsh drug sentences in Oregon is frankly ludicrous. The sentence for your fourth conviction for heroin in my county is 10 days in jail, probably 8 of which is served in jail. In fact, after 2 days, you'll probably be released. Now, that sounded to me like he was trying to say to you, the legislators, that there's no reason for defelonizing this first offense stuff. We don't really deal with people by putting them in jail for this stuff anyway. He objected to my characterization of that. I sent him the transcript so he could see that that's what he said. That was pretty much where we left it, actually.
Well, you know, I'm not going to try to argue with Marquis right now here. Let me put it another way for me. And it is related to felony. If you have a felony conviction and you try to get a job or you try to get an apartment or a scholarship, an education, felony conviction has a very different issue than a misdemeanor. Very different. And yet you can get messed. That is and it's a mark that is indelible on anything that you try to do from then on. I have enough folks who, if they enough stories that we had enough stories of people who had small possession, but they suddenly had a felony conviction. Now, what does that do to a community? In my view, it does an awful lot. If you have, and especially if you have law enforcement targeting those folks, let's see, you know, those folks, they're going to have some drugs on them. That's the way we're sure of that, even if they don't necessarily. They're going to have drugs on them. So we're going to check them out. It turns out, of course, that the amount of drugs are usually as it may be even smaller than the majority population, but they're going to be checked out more often. So you end up with a lot of people with felony convictions. Well, if they have felony convictions and they can't get jobs and they can't get housing and they can't get education, what happens to that community? Well, that community starts to fall apart. There's a great documentary called 13th that speaks to that issue. I want to see some way of breaking through that wall that says that that has been created around certain communities. I want to see families develop. And if you can't get a job, it's difficult for you to really have a solid family life. If you can't get housing, you can't do that. If you can't get education, you can't do that. So this is a small piece, a small part, but I think it may have a larger impact if we are able to move from a felony conviction to misdemeanor to maybe even less than that. But if we start really talking about how we deal with treatment, and that's part of this bill as well, how we start dealing with treatment rather than placing someone in a jail cell as if that is going to be treatment to help them when they get out. That doesn't work. So that's what I'm looking at. It's a much longer, larger picture than just a particular conviction or trial of one form. I think that if we start to deal with the felony issue in a much larger sense, we start to actually have an impact on a whole community effort. And that's what I want to see happen.
That again was a portion of an interview I had with Senator Lou Frederick. On October 23rd, we'll have a show, and that was a good long interview. So that was just a small bit. Some important things we're talking about, though, these issues like racial profiling and the drug laws, arrests, and these are the things we talk about here. It's not just about the criminal justice side, too. It's also about how to break that prison pipeline, how to break that school-to-prison or such pipeline. And your support makes it possible for us to bring these perspectives to you. Now, for more of that, let's go over to Karen and Vince.
Thank you, Adam. I just want to remind you, you are listening to Prison Pipeline at KBOO Portland. That's KBOO Portland. We are in the middle of our membership drive. Actually, we've just crossed over the hump, Karen, and we're coming close to the end. And we have made some great leeway in getting close to our overall goal. And we do have a ways to go. You know, I just want to say that it was handed to me that with just a $10 a month KBOO sustainable donation. That's $10 a month. That's less, way less than a dollar a day, definitely. What we're doing is we're offering something that is absolute treasure trove. Now, I happen to have one of these. These are wonderful. This is actually our KBOO USB drive. It is a 4 gig KBOO USB flash drive. And this thing, listeners, this thing is filled with just amazing commentary. Example, 1969 interview with Pete Seeger. Amazing. Noam Chomsky, and I want to remind you, these are all done and available only here on our flash drive through us here at KBOO. Also, we offer a ton of music on this as well. And also, there's a bit of room for you to save some things on there. And also, on this, we have a folder of open source software. So for just $10 a month, sustainable for a year, we will get you this USB, again, which is just a treasure trove of information, amazing lectures, commentary, music, and it was all done right here at KBOO. Karen?
Yes, and you can get one of those flash drives right now by calling 877-500-5266, or you can click on the donate button on our website at kboo.fm. What more could they ask for? My goodness. We're going to offer you this wonderful thank you gift, this flash drive, $10 a month. That's $120 a year. $10 a month. What does it come out to? About 33 cents a day?
About that, yeah.
So 4 gig KBOO USB flash drive filled with MP3s and podcasts. And I'll tell you, these are some of the Margaret Mead, 1968 interview with Margaret Mead. Molly Ivins, bless her soul. Oh, man. Ken Kesey at Powell's. Pete Seeger. Daniel Berrigan, Dick Gregory. These are
again available, know, really
available
only through us.
And only through KBOO.
Yeah.
So 877-500-5266, and you can be the owner of this fabulous US flash drive. So
yeah, this is amazing. I want to remind folks that, you know, if First of all, if for your membership, for those members that are listening right now, thank you so much for being a part of our family, supporting us for over the years or however long you've been a part of us, even if you've just joined in the last few minutes. Thank you so much for your support. And, you know, just because you've entered into awesomeness with your membership with KBOO, you know, tell your friends and family, come join us, be a part of us, and again, be a part of the voices that speak to the whole family, that speak to the families that are affected by, again, who people are incarcerated, people who are affected by the movements that are going on today, people who are affected by the social injustices that we are facing today. And we, again, here at KBOO have been through all that, and we will continue to do that with your support. Again, call 877-500-5266. And again, be entered into a chance to win our daily prize.
Yes, and we have our members support KBOO. They have been supporting KBOO for 49 years, as Vince, as you have been saying. And but if you are new to the area, if you've never, I always say KBOO is the most hidden treasure here in this city. Mm. A lot of people still aren't even aware that such a radio station, such a wonderful community radio station exists. And if you are surfing the dial and just came across KBOO, please give us a call. Come on down 20 Southeast 8th. Visit us, see what we're all about, and you'll fall in love with this wonderful community of volunteers and hosts and all types of wonderful people that are
to provide this wonderful energy and electricity.
Yes, and that form this community. So we're ready to get back to Prison Pipeline. We are ready to get back to Prison Pipeline.
Hey, we're back.
We are back. How's it going?
Hey,
right on. Talking. Long time no see.
Yeah, we're just geeking out on policy stuff. It's fun.
Yeah. So you know that's one thing about this show. Again, you know you're not going to get this on any other station. So we can't say it enough to really support KBOO in this time. And again, because of the resource, you know, I mean, the stuff that we do on the show. Before I was on the show, while I'm on the show, when I'm on the show, when I'm listening to your show, Doug, when I'm listening to Karen, James, or anybody, I'm learning about the kind of work that I'm involved in trying to advocate against really prison industrial complex, but also, you know, building something new, supporting those friends and family members and stuff. So it's all about being in the know. And you know, so that's one thing we really bring to the table. And I always get to learn a lot, Doug, when I listen to you, because, you know, I guess, you know, I kind of don't follow the policy stuff as much. That's just not my thing. You know what I mean? But that's your thing. And I know that you got all kinds of stuff that's kind of like kind of the new cutting edge, if you will, stuff that's going on. You know, like what's some recent stuff, you know?
Well, just today, the FBI released its Uniform Crime Report. It's their annual report on crime in America. This is reported crime, so when they talk about the number of violent crimes or the number of property crimes, these are the ones that are being reported to the police. So if you see an increase, it's possible that's because people have started to report more often. As it is, less than half of the violent crimes that are committed each year are actually ever reported to the police. Only about a third of the property crimes are ever reported to the police. Those numbers vary. Wow. When I was talking with Senator Frederick earlier about the Latino ethnicity, why that's important, according to the FBI, some 69% of arrests were of whites, some 20-some percent were of African Americans, and a very small percentage were other races. Well, the fact is that Latina and Latinos are mixed in with white numbers. So we really don't have an accurate view of what's going on in law enforcement, what's going on with the criminal justice. And because of that, well, it makes it more difficult to have good policy. Good policy requires good data. This new bill, HB 2355, will force the state of Oregon to start reporting on Latin American ethnicity. So rather than seeing these numbers about, oh, all these white people, see, we're not racially biased, look at all these white people, we'll find out that, in fact, a number of these people were actually Latin American and were being targeted because of their race, because of their ethnicity. So I see Karen has rejoined us. Karen, have you got something for us? Oop. Or Adam?
No. Karen, is it on? Yeah.
I want to give you my microphone.
Oh, thank you.
You're on.
Sharing is caring.
Yeah. There we go.
Oh, I got the other one.
You're on.
Okay, I'm on live radio here, folks. Yeah. And speaking of immigrant justice, the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, I do have a message from them. For years now, the Portland Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, office has cast its shadow over Portland, and this is where armed ICE officers bring the immigrant families where they have been detained, and it's the last stop before the infamous White Geo Group van arrives to sweep them away to the Tacoma Detention Center in Washington. So many Portlanders don't even know of its existence, let alone its history, its purpose, and its direct impact on our communities. So I wanted to bring you this information tonight. There are two ongoing monthly opportunities for all of us to join in being present, being a witness, and making more visible the reality of the injustice happening every day at the Portland ICE office in the South Waterfront District of Portland, Oregon, right in our community, right in our neighborhood. So the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice invites us all to help raise awareness about the building's purpose and to show your support for those family members being detained or complying with regular check-ins with ICE officers. Now, they have one vigil called Last Thursday Witness, and the next vigil will be held this Thursday, September 28th. And it is held the last Thursday of each month at 10 a.m. in the morning at the ICE office at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland. And that's on the corner of McAdam and Bancroft. And all are invited to join in this monthly vigil outside the ICE office. And each month they feature a different program with representatives and ritual from various faith traditions, including a call to witness and a call to action. They also have a mindful walk for immigrant justice, and that is organized by the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice Buddhist Peace Fellowship, and that's the second Thursdays at 12 noon at the ICE office, again at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland. And you don't have to be a Buddhist or a member of any faith, and they will have instruction in the practice of moving meditation at each walk. So please join them, the Last Thursday Witness, and also the Mindful Walk for Immigrant Justice, which is held the second Thursdays at noon. So please help support these ICE detentions, the families, and this very injustice that's happening right in our community.
Great. Thanks a lot, Karen. We appreciate you bringing that up, because that is another issue that we talk about on the show, that very often in the discussion of mass incarceration, people forget about, because we do talk about millions of people in the larger prison industrial complex around the country. We know even there's like another 2 million youth or so that are locked up. So that's a different number too. That's separate. Adults and youth. So really, you know, when they talk about U.S. having the most people incarcerated, then, you know, it's also including young people. And then there's this whole detention piece, and that's including people from all over the world. So again, when they're talking about doing these events at these detention centers, you know, they're interfaith, they're multicultural, because there are people from all over the world. And again, that also includes very, very young people in those places. I mean, young kids, and some of them are detained in Tacoma for over a year or so. So and these are not opportunities where people necessarily can be visited as easily as jails or prisons. In a lot of cases, you have family members who are undocumented themselves, so they can't even step foot to these places and show up and try to visit their loved ones or even make contact. So there's these mitigating circumstances that are happening. So Doug, you know, on those policies, did you want to say a little bit more about kind of how that relates to kind of all these roundups, especially with the political climate? Because we have a you know, quote unquote, I don't like to use the word president, I guess with a cap, like lowercase p or something, who is like really I don't know, I guess the enemy of the people is the best way to explain it. So it's kind of like talking about immigration in this time, and I mean, we have somebody who's openly, you know, I mean, not only is he somebody who's not appreciative of people of other creeds and whatnot coming to the United States, but even people within the U.S., I mean, somebody maybe he'd spit on his own neighbor. So it's kind of like, you know, where do you think that puts us right now with all this?
Well, you see, and the problem is that with the blame game and with the scapegoating, we end up misdirecting law enforcement. There's a thing called clearance where you have an offense, something, a crime is committed, and someone gets arrested and they're charged or indicted, and that's how you clear that crime from the books. You've cleared it. Well, we don't clear any, we do less than a fifth of the property crimes. We do barely half, in fact, less than half of violent crimes are ever cleared by an arrest, and that, of course, it's if you believe that the police have found the right culprit as opposed to someone who just fit into the frame, then we still have all these crimes that go unsolved. And the big problem is we're really good at bringing in the usual suspects. We're good at scapegoating and at blaming certain groups. Right. If you have dark skin, if you're not from this country, then we suspect you. Well, most of the crimes that get committed never get cleared. And the reason for that is because we just don't focus on people who may be committing crimes. And that's part of this whole problem. By having the focus on immigrants, by having a focus on people with dark skin, we miss most of the people committing the crimes. And right, that means right. Public safety is, you know, is just down the, is just out the window. And you, if you really care about the criminal justice system, then you've got to think about outside the box. You've got to stop going after the usual suspects and start focusing on real effective crime prevention and real effective crime solutions. These are things that we're not doing. And unfortunately, the guy who's currently occupying the Oval Office and his henchmen at the attorney at the Justice Department, Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, are pushing these bad policies. The aim is at people who aren't necessarily committing the crimes, while people who are being allowed to run free. And, you know, frankly, the majority of crimes are committed by people whose skin looks like mine. And that's where the real problem is.
Well, you know, you're preaching the choir. You know, you're in good company here with KABU. So we want to remind everybody to support the station, you know, and on behalf of Prison Pipeline Collective, we want to thank you for tuning into this program, tuning into KABU, supporting KABU. So, of course, this is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. So listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. And want to thank our fine folks here from the collective and our lovely engineer in the booth, Danielle Parks. We want to say have a great evening. Free them all. We will see you next week. Thank you.
Cheers.
Support KABU.
$100 to go to reach your goal.
Adam, Doug, thank you so much for the program this evening. Again, very imperative dialogue that we need to be having here, not just in our community, but nationwide. Thank you again. You know, folks, here we are. We're coming up to the end of the hour here, and we are in the middle of our pledge drive and our membership drive right now. We are $200 away from reaching our goal, actually, of $320 for the end of this hour. We are about just a few minutes away from that, from reaching our goal, so please help us get there. We need your support. We need your help today. Definitely, we need to keep bringing this broadcasting to you. Again, these important voices to have these discussions. It is not just with Prison Pipeline, but with all the other public affairs that we bring you, the news, the music. We are here 24/7. So again, just $200. We're just that much short to end up the hour here, to shore up the hour and put us that much closer to our overall goal. We want you to know that we love you all so much, our community. You are a community, whether a member or not. But again, be a part of this collective that we are, KABU Independent Radio. We are a movement. And we must move forward with our voices and our cool music. Again, we're here 24/7. You can always pick up the phone, 877-500-5266. Call now. That's 877-500-5266. If you've not called yet this hour, help us reach our goal. Again, you can reach us at kboo.fm and click on donate to be able to do it that way if you're not able to use your phone at the moment. And again, we are so close to our goal, just a couple minutes away, just another $200. Again, call 877-500-5266. be a part of helping us spread the word. This is what we've done, again, for 49 years. We know what to do best. We know our community best. We have been an anchor in this community now for those 49 years. We've even helped shape and form the city and also in Oregon. And, you know, we are not going to stop, and, you know, we can't stop. It's so important because we are the voice of this community. And not just, we're not talking about just Portland, we're talking about Oregon. And we have listeners actually all over the world, believe it or not. We are actually an international radio station because of the fact through technology. We have people that are members all the way down in California, all the way to Florida. It is amazing. We do have outside support from our little community.
Worldwide, yes. Putting Portland and KABU on the map. And we would like to thank right now Vincenza from Portland, a renewing member. Thank you so much, Vincenza.
Yay.
And Karen from Beaverton, a renewing member. Thank you, Karen.
Yay. Thank you, Karen.
And thank you so much for supporting KABU, supporting Prison Pipeline, supporting the host tonight from Prison Pipeline. We're all here. We'd love to meet you. Come on down. Bring your change. Bring your wallet. Bring your checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
And we have at least about a half a minute left to reach our goal, $200 more. We'd love to hear from you. Call, phone on behalf of a incarcerated family member, friend, loved one, 877-500-5266. Again, kboo.fm. We'd love to hear wherever you are worldwide. We would love to receive your donation, your contribution to keep this radio station on the air alive and well. 877-500-5266.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Tyco Together on Saturday, September 30th at 7 p.m. at the PCC Sylvania Performing Arts Center in Portland. Tyco Together is a concert that brings together four different Portland-based Tyco drumming groups for an evening of high-energy performance and collaboration that highlights the unique sounds of this Japanese-American art form. Again, that's Tyco Together on Saturday, September 30th at 7 p.m. at the PCC Sylvania Performing Arts Center, 12,000 Southeast 49th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.